Welcome to Pardes Daily, where you get your daily dose of Torah with Pardes faculty. This month, Pardes is bringing Elul to you. Let's dive in.
Hello, everyone. This is Tzvi Hirschfield, and today I'm sitting in the Pardes Institute of Jerusalem, and we are still working our way through the third chapter of Tractate Rosh Hashanah. We are beginning today from the very bottom of 27b, Chafzayin Amud Bet, the last two words, the Amud Amar Rabba, and then we are going to continue on through Kafchet Amud Aleph. 28a is our target for today. So let's begin. Amar Rabba. Shama miktsat kia babor, umiktsat kia al sfat habor yatsa. Miktsat kia kodem sheale murashachar, umiktsat kia So Rabbah tells us two things. He says that if one heard part of the shofar blast from inside the pit, and he heard part of the shofar blast outside on the edge of the pit, or his head is above the pit, he has fulfilled his obligation. However, if he heard part of the shofar blast before the dawn has risen, and part of the shofar blast after it has risen, he has not fulfilled his obligation. I should emphasize the issue of the dawn, of course, is that shofar is a mitzvah during the daytime, and therefore the obligation to blow shofar can only be fulfilled during the day, which at its earliest point is about an hour, 72 minutes before sunrise, called Amud HaShachar, the rising of the dawn, is the beginning of halachic daytime for the performance of many mitzvot. So Abaye, of course, is going to question why the inconsistency. Why is it that in the first case, where he's inside the bore and outside the bore, in the pit and out of the pit, he has fulfilled his obligation, but in the second case, he has not? Amar le Abaye, Maishna Hatam, what's the difference there? Debeina kulat kia b'chiyuv avaleka, hachanami beina kulat kia chiyuv avaleka. He says, I don't understand what's the distinction. If indeed we require the entire tkia be done in a place where one can fulfill the obligation, right? Then here too, we require the tkiya to be done in a place where one can fulfill the obligation. What is the distinction between in the pit and outside of the pit versus before daylight and after the beginning of the morning and daylight? Hachi hashta Rabba responds, are they really comparable? Hatam laila lazman chiyuvahu klau, hacha bor makom chiyuvahu laotana omdim. So Rabba says they're not comparable. Nighttime is not a time of fulfilling the obligation at all. So whatever blowing took place and it was still dark doesn't count for anything. But in the case of the pit is a place of obligation for those who are standing in the pit. It just so happens by moving from in the pit and out of the pit, both are places of obligation. It's just that when he's out of the pit, inside the pit is problematic for him because of the echo. The Gemara goes on to ask, "Lemeimra de Saba Rabba Shama Sof Tkia Below Tchilat Tkia Yatsa?" Does this mean to say that Rabba thinks that hearing just part the end of the Tkia, without hearing the beginning of the Tkia, right? Hearing only the end of the blowing and not the beginning, you'll fulfill your obligation? Umimelin, from that we can infer further, Tchilat Tkia Below Sof Tkia Yatsa? That if one only heard the beginning of the tkiah, and didn't hear the latter part of the tkiah, he'd also fulfill the obligation? In other words, the Gemara is saying, does this mean, based on what Rabba has taught, that if one can hear the blowing from inside the pit and also outside the pit, the same tkiah, and fulfill this obligation, does that mean hearing only part of the tkiah is halachically significant and they can fulfill their obligation? Now, in terms of this hearing the part of the tkiah, I should emphasize that according to most Rishonim, especially Nachmanides, it means even if the part of the tkiah was the required length, Nachmanides and the Ritva and others believe hearing a partial tkiah, even if the piece that you heard fulfill is long enough to be considered a kosher tkiah, would not fulfill the obligation. You have to hear the whole blast. The Rashba brings the idea hypothetically that even if you only heard a piece of a tkiah, that would be sufficient, even though you did not hear the required, 2 seconds or 3 seconds of time that the tkiah is supposed to be. Tashma, come in here. Takaba rishona umashach b'shniyah kashnayim. As we've spoken about in the past, a set is a tkiah followed by a trua followed by a tkiah. So what would happen if one blew the first tkiah blast, then the trua, and then in the second tekiah blast, blew it double length of time, trying to have that second tekiah serve as the end of the first set of three, and also serve as tekiah for the upcoming set of three. Ein biyado el achad only counts for one. Presumably, it only counts as the third of the opening set. It does not work for the next set. V'amai tislak lebetarte. If a piece of a tekiah is sufficient, that the Gemara is suggesting, then let a piece of that tekiah work for the end of the third set of the first set, and let the other piece, another piece of that tekiah work for the opening of the second set. The Gemara says, Pasuke tekiata mahadre lo paskina, we can't break up a single tekiah. Right? We can't artificially claim that there were two blasts of the shofar there when it was only one. So again, bringing another question onto Rabbah's halacha, the Gemara says as follows: Tashma, hatokeh l'toch habor l'toch haduth l'toch hapitas. Right, that's a quote from our Mishnah. Right, one who blows a shofar inside of a pit or inside of a cellar or inside of a large barrel or vessel, in kol shofar shema yatsa, in kol havara shema lo yatsa. If he hears the sound of the shofar, he's fulfilled his obligation. If he hears an echo, he has not. Va'amai. Let him, the Gemara says, fulfill his obligation by hearing the tekiah note before the echo starts to interfere. Because if hearing a part of a tekiah is sufficient, then the fact that the echo is going to come in on the second part of the tekiah shouldn't make a difference, because you already heard the first part. And Rabbah's whole halakha seemed to be that hearing part of the tekiah would be sufficient. So the Gemara is going to reinterpret what Rabbah meant. Ki ka'ama Rabbah betokea ve'ole lenafshe. It's talking about a person who started blowing the shofar inside the pit, but then he lifted his head and presumed the shofar also above the pit. Ihachi ma'ilameimra. If that's so, what's being taught here? Of course he's fulfilling his obligation. Mahu detema. What would I have said? Zimde nemapik reshe vekati shofar babor. Maybe as he's lifting his head out of the pit, his ears are above the edge of the pit, but the shofar is still inside the pit, and therefore he would still be hearing the echo. The kama arbev kala, and there'll be a mixture of sounds, the shofar sound and the echo sound. Kamash malan, that is so unusual, we do not make a gzera against it, and we assume he heard straight from the shofar the whole way through, and therefore he has fulfilled his obligation. The Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda said, "B'shofar shel olah lo yitka ve'im taka yatsa." If one used the horn of an olah offering, that is an offering of, let's say, in this case, a ram that's being offered to be consumed on the altar in the temple, if one used the horn that Rashi points out was taken off the animal before it was sacrificed, he shouldn't use it, but if he did, he fulfilled his obligation. Now, just to explain briefly what's happening here, there's a prohibition that's called me'ilah, of deriving benefit from something that's been consecrated for use by the temple. And if one uses something in that way, they have to pay it back to the temple and pay a fine of a fifth and also bring a korban, a sacrifice. Now, this is in a case where one did mi'ilah bishogeg unintentionally, which is our case here. They didn't realize it was a consecrated animal or a consecrated horn. Therefore, as soon as they start to use it, it now becomes chulin. It becomes fit for any use. So once a person has done mi'ilah and derived benefit from a consecrated item, the item is now like everything else. You can't do mi'ilah on it again. So therefore, what was being taught here presumably is the idea you shouldn't do it, because by blowing into the horn, you will be performing mi'ilah. But if you did it, you still fulfilled your obligation, because when you fulfill the mitzvah, the shofar is no longer sacred, but you still shouldn't do it. B'shofar shel shlamim lo yitka v'im taka lo yatsa. However, in a shofar shel shlamim, a shlamim offering is an offering whose meat is consumed by a kohen and by the person who offered it, and some goes on the altar. You also shouldn't blow shofar with that, but if you did, you have not fulfilled your obligation. So the Gemara wants to explore why not. So my taima, what's the reason? Ola bat me'ilahi. As I explained, an ola has a problem of me'ilah. of deriving benefit from a consecrated item. But once you've done me'ila with it, it now goes, it's now no longer consecrated and no longer a problem. Shlamim delav b'nei me'ila ninu, but shlamim, which are not a problem of me'ila, they do not have the problem of me'ila, of using a consecrated item, because some of the meat is eaten in any event. Therefore, isurahu derachei b'hu v'lo nafkei l'chulin. Therefore, the prohibition of using a korban for an inappropriate use, that prohibition rides on it the whole way through, and therefore it never becomes unconsecrated, therefore it's prohibited. The Ritva explains the reason you haven't fulfilled the obligation is because of a problem of mitzvah haba ba'aveira, that when you perform a mitzvah through the performance of an aveira, of a sin, you have not fulfilled that mitzvah, and therefore in the case of the Ola, the sin comes before you fulfilled the commandment, and therefore you are still Yotze, you still fulfilled it. But in the case of Shlamim, the prohibition stays all the way through, and therefore the whole time you're blowing that shofar, you're also performing a prohibition, and therefore you have not fulfilled your requirement. Matkeif la Rava. Rava challenges this halacha. Eimat ma'al, when do you actually perform mi'ila? When have you actually derived benefit from a consecrated item? He says, levatar detaka, only after you've blown the shofar. Hikataka bi'isurataka. The whole time you were blowing, it still stayed in its state of prohibition. Therefore, since the mi'ila problem would only come at the end, then the whole time you're blowing that shofar, you're still performing the act of mi'ila, of deriving unlicensed benefit from a sacred item, and therefore you should not be fulfilling the commandment at all. Ella am Rava, therefore Rava concludes, echad zeh v'echad zeh lo yatza. Both shlamim and ola, a shofar of shlamim and a shofar of ola, you have not fulfilled your obligation because you are performing a prohibition the whole time you are using the shofar. But then Rava retracts. Hadar am Rava, but Rava retracted his statement. Echad zeh v'echad zeh yatza. In either case, in the case of a shofar of an ola or of a shofar of shlamim, you have fulfilled your obligation. Why? Mitzvot lav lahanot nitnu. Mitzvot are not given in order for us to derive benefit. When one performs a mitzvah, according to Rava, we don't derive benefit. Rather, we're performing the God's commandments, but it's not considered personal benefit. And therefore, by performing a commandment with a shofar belonging to a korban, to a sacrifice, that is not mi'ila, because we have not derived personal benefit. Therefore, you have fulfilled the commandment. Amar Rav Yehuda, the shofar shel avodah zarah lo yitka. Rav Yehuda then goes on to say, a shofar that was either consecrated to avodah zarah or comes from an animal that was used for idolatry, lo yitka, you shouldn't blow. V'im taka yatsa, but if you did, you fulfilled your requirement. Because, again, the item is prohibited in benefit, just like all things associated with idolatry are prohibited in benefit. But since mitzvot are not considered benefit for a person, which is a fascinating idea, you have not violated the prohibition by blowing a shofar of avodah zarah. You shouldn't do it ideally because, as Rishonim say, it's offensive, it's disgusting. You shouldn't use an item associated with idolatry to perform a mitzvah. But it is still not considered to be a violation of deriving benefit. Therefore, you have fulfilled your requirement. B'shofar shel ir hanidachat. However, a shofar that belongs to an ir nidachat. Ir nidachat is the strange case we find where an entire city has been judged to be guilty of performing avodah zarah, and therefore everything in the city has to be burnt up. So here, in taka lo yatsa, if you use a shofar from an ir nidachat, you have not fulfilled the requirement. My taima, what's the reason? Ir hanidachat kitute mikatat shiure. Anything that comes from an ir hanidachat is considered lacking a shiur. I mean, it's like it doesn't exist. The principle being, anything that has to be burnt up is like it's burnt up already. It's like it's not even there. Halachically, it doesn't exist. We find a similar halacha by a lulav that comes from Ir Nidachat, that it's considered Michtat Shi'ure in the beginning of the third chapter of Sukkah. So therefore, quite literally, it physically doesn't exist, and therefore one could not fulfill a mitzvah with it. Amar Rava. Hamudar Hana'am Echavro, again, we're still in this theme of mitzvot not being a source of personal benefit. Amar Rava, Hamudar Hana'am Echavro, Mutar Litkoalo Tkia Shel Mitzvah. One who has taken a neder, an oath, that he will not derive benefit from another person, that person can still blow shofar for them. Hamudar Hana'ami Shofar Mutar Litkoalo Tkia Shel Mitzvah. And if they have taken an oath not to derive benefit from a shofar, that shofar could still be used for the performance of a mitzvah. Again, because mitzvot are not considered benefit, therefore they have not violated their oath. Ve'amar Rava, Rava continues, Hamudar Hana'am Echavero, one who has also taken an oath not to benefit his friend in any way, or derive benefit from his friend in any way, Maze Alav Mechata Bimot HaKshamim Avalo Bimot HaChama. That friend can sprinkle him with the water from the ashes of a red heifer, if he's a Kohen, and make him pure in the winter months, but not in the summer months. The issue there being that the halachic benefit of becoming pure is not considered benefit and doesn't violate the oath, but the benefit of being cooled off by those soothing drops of water would be a violation of deriving benefit. Therefore, in the winter months, it's okay because no one wants to get wet when it's cold, but in the summer months where it's pleasurable and he derives physical pleasure, that is hana'an, he cannot. Hamudar Hana'ami Mayan, someone who takes an oath, I'm not going to derive any benefit from that stream over there. Tovel bo tfilah shel mitzvah bimot hakshamim, aval lo bimot hachama. Again, they can immerse themselves for halachic reasons in the winter months, but not in the summer months, because in the summer months, not only do they are they fulfilling the halacha and becoming pure, which is not a problem of benefit, but the physical pleasure of taking a nice cold dip in a fresh spring would be personal benefit, and therefore it would still be prohibited. And now we're going to move on to the issue that came up in our mission at the end of kavanah, of intentionality when performing a mitzvah. Shlachu leila avua de Shmuel, they sent the following to Shmuel's father. Kefa'o v'achal matzah yatsa. If someone forced him to eat matzah, he has still fulfilled his obligation at Pesach. Kefa'o man, well, who compelled him? Ilema kefa'o shed. If a demon compelled him, meaning he did it in a sense, a personal moment of insanity. V'ha tanya. We know from a braita, itim chalim, itim shoteh. Kshu chalim, harehu kikipeach l'chol dvarav. Kshu shoteh, harehu kishoteh l'chol dvarav. A person who is sometimes healthy and sometimes quite literally out of their minds, when they are healthy, they are considered to be mentally competent in all things. When they are not competent, then they are incompetent for everything, meaning that if a person was compelled by an internal breakdown with reality, then they, of course, they can't fulfill their obligation because they're not mentally competent to begin with. So therefore, what does it mean he was compelled? Amravashi Shikfa'u Parsim, the Persians compelled him. Persians broke into his house on Seder night and said, listen, you, we know you don't want to participate. You're protesting the Seder. We don't care. And they forced him to eat matzah. According to this, he has still fulfilled his obligation. Amar Rava, Rava said the following, Zotomeret HaTokel Ashir Yatzah. Right? Rather than inferred from there that one who blew shofar just for song and happened to blow the right tkiyas and the right tkuas, truas, has also fulfilled their obligation. Because if we're saying that intentionality does not count, then the same way if you're forced to eat matzah and you eat it, you fulfilled your obligation. So if you happen to listen to shofar without intentionality for mitzvah, you've also fulfilled your obligation. The Gemara says, pshita, that's obvious. Hainu hach, it's the same thing. Both are cases where there is no intention to perform a mitzvah, but the mitzvah is seen as performed. Mahu detema, what would I have said? Why would I think that they might be different? Hatam echol matzah amar rachmana v'ha'acha. In the case of eating matzah, whatever your intention was, you didn't want to eat it, you don't want to perform a mitzvah, the Torah said eat matzah, and in fact, you ate matzah. Aval hacha zichron trua. But in the case of shofar, shofar is seen as a zichron truah, meaning it is a conscious act to bring, to mention us before God, remind God of who we are. V'hai mit asek ba'almahu. Maybe when you blow shofar for the purpose of a song, that's not even considered blowing shofar. In other words, eating is always eating. Whether you're forced to eat or you eat willingly, eating is a defined act. Eating is eating. You derive the benefit from eating. The food goes down your throat. You taste it. You swallow it. It fills you up. But perhaps something like shofar blowing for the purpose of mitzvah, and shofar blowing for the purpose of song are not the same actions at all. They're theoretically completely different. Kamash malan, we don't say that, but in fact, since intentionality is not required, in the end, we say that even if you hear shofar blowing that was intended for song, you have still fulfilled the mitzvah. Next time, we're going to continue on 28b and continue discussing the issue of Kavanah, intentionality in the performance of mitzvot. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you to our Pardes faculty, and thank you to you, our learners. Make sure to check back in at the beginning of each week to stay on track with your Elul learning, and visit www.pardes.org.il for more information about Pardes and our programs.